If you would, please turn back in your Bibles to where we read together on page 857, and we'll begin our first part of thinking together about the birth of Jesus. The title for this evening is Laid in a Manger. But in one way, one of the questions we're asking is, where was that manger? Where was that manger? And to wrestle with this question, we'll begin by thinking about the Judean culture of the time that Luke is talking about. Now, culture doesn't trump Bible truth, but it is important to consider it alongside Bible truth. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to first think a little bit about the culture that would have existed in Joseph and Mary's time, especially in the area of Bethlehem, and see how that helps us think about where this manger might have been. And so the first heading that we have here is a Bethlehem welcome, a Bethlehem welcome. Culturally, what should happen when Joseph and his young pregnant wife arrive in Bethlehem? What would normally happen in a place like Bethlehem back then? And the first thing that we can say is that there would have been Bethlehem hospitality. So in a general sense, Bethlehem would have shown hospitality. That it was in their blood and in their nature to be hospitable. It's even the same even today, right now. If you were to go to Bethlehem, and that you would get a warm welcome into such a place. Even in extraordinary circumstances, if you were a peace-loving type of person, you should expect a warm welcome. And you could say that Mary and Joseph, under normal circumstances, absolutely, Bethlehem should have given them culturally a warm welcome. More than that, though, they should have got a particularly hospitable welcome in Bethlehem, because Joseph is a returning son of David. We see that in verse 4. Verse 4 of our passage, we're told that he was of the house and lineage, so therefore the family line, the family of David, King David, that is. And of course, Bethlehem is King David's hometown. David is revered and honored still in Bethlehem. So you might think about, we've heard a lot in the news, haven't we, about Lionel Messi recently. And we might say, well, Lionel Messi, he's from Argentina. But the people of Rosario, Santa Fe in Argentina, they would say, yes, but more, he is one of us. He is from our town. He is our hero first. So imagine 80 years from now, a man turns up in Rosario, Santa Fe, Argentina, and nobody there knows him, but he pulls out his passport and he says, look, I am the great grandson of Lionel Messi. What welcome do you think he's going to get from the people there? He's going to get a good welcome because Lionel Messi is their hero and he's a direct descendant. Well, how much more will that be true with Joseph when he turns up in Bethlehem? Remember, Joseph isn't just from Bethlehem. He is a direct descendant of King David himself. We saw that, didn't we, in verse 4. This means he can knock on most doors in Bethlehem and start quoting his genealogy, and they will welcome him in. He can say, I'm Joseph, son of Jacob, son of Matan, son of Eliezer, son of Solomon, son of King David. Come on in. Wow. That would be the response of most people living in Bethlehem. Furthermore, it isn't wrong for us to assume that Joseph actually should have some extended but fairly close relatives living in Bethlehem who would welcome him. Oh, dear son, come on in. So culturally, it is hard to believe that Joseph would need a hotel or an inn in Bethlehem if such a place existed in Bethlehem. But there's more. Of course, he has a young, pregnant wife. That's also important. If it would be an honor in Bethlehem to show hospitality to a returning son of David, it would be an unthinkable shame to ignore a pregnant woman who is ready to give birth. Not only would the mothers of Bethlehem feel deep shame at one of their own having to give birth in a stable, it would be a shame on the whole town for her to give birth at an inn. You see, the home was the place for all births to happen. To think it would happen anywhere else is inconceivable for them. The moment any mother of Bethlehem heard that a young woman was about to give birth and had nowhere to give birth, she would take action. You can imagine her rushing into her home. Get up! Stop eating! Move this table! All you men, take a long walk! This girl needs a home to have a baby in. She needs privacy. Call the Bethlehem midwife. Do it now. Come on, ladies, let's get things ready. This is a major event. It's a matter of honor. Now, I think we can appreciate this. In 7 days' time, some of us will be with family, maybe at a New Year's meal, lunchtime. Maybe the house might be full of relatives, jam-packed with relatives. You're just about to sit down together. And suddenly there's a knock on the door and a young man says, my wife is about to give birth. We've just got the timing all wrong. Do you think even now in our culture they would say, oh, I'm really sorry to hear that, but there's no room? No, they're going to realize priorities have suddenly been changed. Everyone's going to understand that. Move, come on, stop. Look, get this woman in here and we need to help her. You certainly wouldn't say to her, well, I tell you what, you can go and give birth in the garage if you would like. We've got to carry on with our meal. That doesn't happen in our culture. Why we would think Bethlehem would do that? That's quite interesting. So some might say, what if Bethlehem was crowded with people because of the census? Doesn't verse 7 say that? Well, we will get to that, but let us just say it was jam-packed with people. I still think it's pretty safe to say that even in a jam-packed town, remember, Bethlehem would have had 400 to 500 people normally. Let's just say that's doubled or even tripled. Even if that's the case, on the night that Mary gives birth, I think it's fairly safe to say that she would be the only one in Bethlehem giving birth. And therefore, she would have received help. The midwife, which there would have been in Bethlehem, would surely have been available to her. There might be crowds, but there is only one woman giving birth. Homes would be open to her if there was a need. It's hard to imagine anything else. So what do I think happened the night Jesus was born? I believe Mary and Joseph were with relatives, and Jesus was born in a family home. And yes, he was laid in a manger, which is what our passage tells us, an animal feeding trough. Now, how could that be? Well, to understand that, let us understand what many of the homes in Judea would have been like. Okay, so here's I'm sorry for the poor graphics, but I hope you can see that. If you on the right side of your screen, there is an ending wall there. It doesn't go on forever. But I hope you can see that this is a side view of what a lot of homes would have been like. They would have been one-room homes. And they would have had a stairs that went down from a top level to a bottom level. And the family would have lived on the top level, and the animals would have been brought in at night, and they would have stayed on the bottom level, and they would have been brought in for security. And in winter, that would have also provided warmth for the family. And then early in the morning, they would have been taken out. And that would have been the daily routine in and out of the home, where there was one door of entrance into the family home. This is what it would have looked like from above. You can see the family living area on the right. And then what we've got in quotes there, the stable or the animal area on the left. And then you see that in some of these homes, they would have been dug into the family area, what they called mangers, feeding troughs for the animals, where a cow or whatever, it would have been about 1 meter, the difference between the two levels, would have gone across and eaten. So archaeology has documented many of these types of homes in Judea and Palestine, some dating from the time of King David himself all the way up even to the 1950s. You could find homes like this. The Old Testament implies such homes. You might remember when Saul went to visit the witch of Endor. And at the end of that visit, he was faint and he needed some food. And we're told that she grabbed a calf from in the house because it was a one-room house. You might recall Jephthah, that judge in Israel who made that foolish vow that he would offer as a sacrifice to God the first thing that came out of his door. And that only really makes sense if he's living in a one-room house like this, where he actually wasn't thinking very straight. He was a bit foolish, and he was thinking, well, an animal will come out first, because there's only one set of doors in the family home. He wasn't thinking daughter, he was thinking goat. In the New Testament, we have references to one-room homes. You might remember Jesus' teaching, where he gave that famous teaching where he said, people do not light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house, because they lived in one-room houses, and the light went to everyone. Jesus is speaking about a common living arrangement that they would have understood. Do you remember when Jesus healed that woman who had been bent over, disabled for 18 years? And the synagogue ruler did not like the fact that Jesus had set her free and loosed her from her disability. And the synagogue ruler objected to it. And Jesus answered him. Of course, because it was a Sabbath, remember. That's why he mainly objected. But Jesus answered him. He said, you hypocrites, doesn't each of you on the Sabbath unloose your ox or donkey from the stall? Now, that word stall is the exact same word for manger that we have here. Did they not untie them from the manger and lead it out to give it water? Then should not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has kept bound for 18 long years, be set free, untied on the Sabbath day from what bound her? He's saying, just like all of you did this morning, untie your animals and let them go. You untied an animal from your home this morning, but you object to me unloosing this woman from her captivity. And when Jesus said this, all of his opponents were humiliated, because they know that's what they had done that very morning. That was the pattern of life. And it was even done on the Sabbath day. That Sabbath leader, that synagogue leader had done it that very morning. And these one-room homes had mangers. Even mangers in the family area. And I think it most likely Jesus was actually laid in just such a manger. And we'll consider more of the Bible text in a moment. Well, let's continue our thoughts together. And our next point there is our second overall point as we think about this this thing about Jesus being laid in the manger, and it's the objections to the kind of Bethlehem welcome that we have been talking about. And one maybe common objection that there would be is that Mary and Joseph were in a hurry. The baby was due any moment. We understand that Bethlehem would have been hospitable, but they didn't have an opportunity to be hospitable. Or do we find any sense of this type of situation in Luke's account here? And we'd have to say, well, no, we don't really, do we? Let's pull out a few comments from Luke's account, some descriptions. So we see in verse 5, he describes Mary as being with child. And that's what the Greek means exactly. It simply means that she was with child. Some of you might remember that the King James Version of the Bible does carry great with child. But I can't find, and I can't find anyone else that thinks there should be a reason why great should be included there. Kind of giving the impression that she was close to delivering her baby. No, the description is just she was with child. Now, we do know a couple of other things about her kind of where she was in her pregnancy. We know that she must have at least been about 4 months pregnant because we can read in verse 56 of chapter 1. And it says, and Mary remained with Elizabeth about 3 months and returned to her home. So we know that Mary went immediately after the angel told her that she would conceive. She went to visit her cousin Elizabeth, and she stayed with Elizabeth probably till just after John the Baptist was born. And then she returned. So that's just about 3 months, or over 3 months. If you add in a bit of travel time and settling time, then you have a kind of minimum of about 4 months. So from Luke's account, and from any other of the Gospels account, Matthew's account, we're dealing with a time frame anywhere between 4 months and 9 months when it comes to Mary being with child. Now, they may have traveled on a donkey when they did travel, but no animal is mentioned in the account here either. Mary may simply have walked 140 kilometers from Nazareth to Bethlehem. There is nothing to say Joseph and Mary didn't make the journey to Bethlehem well before the birth, planning insufficient stops on the way. In fact, if we look at verse 6, the way that verse 6 is expressed would kind of lean in that direction. So it says, and while they were there in Bethlehem, while they were there, it implies that they have definitely arrived, and that after arriving, while they are there, then we're told the time came. Now, that's not the time of God's sovereign planning. That's the time of Mary and her 9 months reaching its full term. The time came for her to give birth. So that verse 6 there really does lean towards Mary and Joseph being in Bethlehem in good time. Now, was that 1 week or was that 2 months? We don't know. But there is no hint here of a last minute arrival for Mary. To be truthful, that seems to come from a product of what we'd call the false gospel of James. So there is an ancient document written in the second century AD, which is called the Gospel of James. And in that, he describes Mary and Joseph traveling towards Bethlehem. But before they get to Bethlehem, Mary is really so on the point of delivery that Joseph has to find a cave for her. And he places her in the cave. And he goes into Bethlehem to look for the midwife. And by the time he gets back, Jesus is already born. Everything has happened. Now, that's the account that he gives. Now, it's clearly, there's so much in that kind of gospel that isn't accurate and true that it's clearly not a correct account. But one of the things that seems to be driving that was the idea that that Jesus is the Son of God and Mary, the Mother of God in their eyes to a certain degree, this event had to happen out of the witness of human eyes. And it's kind of, this is what's driving it a little bit. That it had to be done without any witnesses. And so Joseph comes back and it's all over. Well, there's certainly a rush that goes on that occasion. But there's none of that here in the text. Of course, in fact, we can see that in this text, Jesus is clearly born in Bethlehem, not on the outskirts. And I think also we have to do justice to Joseph. Joseph is an organized man. That's the impression that we get. You might remember that when Joseph heard from the angel, before he heard from the angel, when he heard from Mary that she was expecting, we see that he was a man who considered things. He stopped and he thought it over. He was a methodical man in that way. And it was while he was thinking it over that the angel came and spoke to him. And we've got to think that Joseph would think over this journey. He would think over what needed to be done. So let's not do Joseph the injustice of saying he left everything to the last minute. So I believe it's a fair conclusion from the passage to assume Joseph and Mary arrived in Bethlehem in good time for the birth. That being the case, was Joseph incapable of finding a home for Mary among his people? You would think not. And let's just say the town was overcrowded and he couldn't find a home. Well, we need to remember that Elizabeth and Zechariah, they lived nearby. They lived nearby. We see that in verse 39, don't we, of chapter 1. It says, in those days, Mary arose and went quickly into the hill country to a town of Judah. That hill country, that's what Bethlehem is in, the hill country of Judea. So they couldn't have been too far away. And that would have been an option for a well-organized Joseph. But of course, God is at work here. The Messiah will be born in Bethlehem. Room will be made. Micah's prophecies will come true. So we see no evidence for any hurry in the Bible text. What's another objection? Another one is that we are told they tried to find a place in the inn. And we see that in verse 7, don't we? And she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling cloths, in bands of cloths, and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the inn. And so we read that they looked for a place and they looked for a place in an inn and they didn't find any, and that's why they had to look elsewhere, and that's why Jesus ended up in a manger. And when we think of inn, the word inn, we think of the kind of inn like a hotel or a commercial inn, a traveler's sleeping place which was open to the public. And Luke understands this kind of inn. And he mentions just this kind of inn in the parable of the Good Samaritan. You might remember that famous parable where a Jewish man, he is attacked by robbers and he's left for dead. And a Samaritan comes along and treats him. And we read in that parable, he, the Good Samaritan, went to the man who had been attacked and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. Now that word in there that Luke uses is the Greek word pandokion. Okay, pandokion. Now I only mention that because we've got to make a contrast here. Okay, but that is a commercial inn. There's no doubt about it that Luke is referring to a commercial inn, one open to the public. And he uses the most appropriate word in Greek for that, which is pandokion. He calls it that commercial inn. Now, the Greek word for inn in our passage is a different word. Okay, it's kataluma. Okay, that's the word kataluma. And Luke uses this elsewhere in his gospel, this very word. So you might recall that when Jesus is preparing for the Passover, he sends his disciples and he says, you will see a man carrying a water jug, follow him to the house that he goes to. And we can read about that in Luke 22. It says, Jesus said, as you enter the city, a man carrying a water jug will meet you. Follow him to the house that he enters and say to the owner of the house, notice it's a house, the teacher asks, where is the guest room? Now that's that word kataluma that Luke uses right here in chapter 2, verse 7. Where is the guest room? Where is the room within the house where I may eat the Passover with my disciples? So the meaning of the word here is a room within a private house. Now, kataluma, it can mean public lodging place. It can mean that. But Luke isn't using it in this way here. So it seems very right to assume that in Luke chapter 2, Luke is using the word kataluma as guest room also, just as he uses it here in chapter 22. So where does that leave Jesus being born in Bethlehem? Well, let's read verse 7 again. And she gave birth to her firstborn son, wrapped him in swaddling cloths, and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the guest room. There was no place for them in the guest room. Where is this guest room? Well, again, we're helped from the culture of the time, and we're helped from archaeology, because not only do you get one room living quarters in Judea and other parts of Israel and the Middle East, but you get ones that have a guest room attached to them also, which has a separate entrance specifically for guests. Some of them were attached on the end. Some of them were built on the flat roof on the top. You might remember with Elisha and the rich woman from Shunam, the Shunammite woman. And she wanted Elisha to come and stay with them often. So she built a guest room up on the flat roof so that he could come there. But others were put on the end of the property like this, and they had their own entrance. And so what this verse can be simply saying is that either Mary and Joseph arrived early and they were in the guest room, but then other relatives arrived, but one way or another, or they arrived later than the relatives, but that guest room became full. And that's the reason why he was laid in a manger, because the family said, no, you must come in here to give birth. It's too crowded. It's not appropriate. We will have you in the home and you can give birth amongst us in the family. So Jesus was born not in a lonely place with lonely Joseph, but with joyful, helpful Bethlehem women around her, even relatives. And Jesus is born not among animals. There is no mention of animals here. There's mention of a manger only. There may have been animals in the place on the lower level, but we're saying that Jesus was on the upper level and he was laid in the manger and he was born among the people of Bethlehem, brothers and sisters. Now, I hope I haven't ruined your Christmas. And I certainly won't be objecting to other preachers sticking to no room in the inn. And I'll still be singing all the stable carols with joy. That might be what happened. I'm not being dogmatic here, but I am just wanting us to consider what the text says and why we say what we say. And you might have other good reasons for what you're thinking. But this is worth thinking over. And what would be some of our ways that we might, what lessons might we learn from this reality? Well, one lesson that we could say is that room was made. You know, often when we think about the Bethlehem story, Bethlehem gets the bad rap, doesn't it? We use it as an example. And we say, look, no room was found for Jesus in Bethlehem. Bethlehem did not do what they should have done. But let's just turn that around then and say, actually, room was made for Jesus. Even though Bethlehem was busy, and I believe it was busy, but even though it was busy, there were people who made room for Mary and Joseph, and therefore they made room for the Messiah. And they had that glorious privilege because they made room of witnessing the birth of the Messiah right amongst them. And what a family affair. And then those shepherds come out of nowhere. They finally find the house. And they say, is there a baby wrapped in cloth in the manger? And they say, yes, there is. And they say, let us in because he's the Messiah. What rejoicing together goes on in that home. All because they made room. Even though the town was busy. Now that's a challenge to us. It's the same challenge, but now Bethlehem is in the good place. Bethlehem is our example. Because we all need to stop and say, have we even made room today? Jesus is our Messiah. But have we really made room? Have we been like Bethlehem? Or have we been so busy that he stayed in the guest room? And we haven't brought him in front and center. No, just try and fit in if it's okay with you. Maybe just a few other thoughts of application maybe. And the first one as we consider our thoughts is simply that God provides family. God provides family. That's what he gave to Mary that night in Bethlehem. And in the weeks that followed, God providing family is a theme of the Bible, isn't it? Foreigners are given a place in Israel. Psalm 68 said, God provides families for the solitary and the lonely. He provides himself for each of us who trust in him, the communion, the fellowship of the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. He welcomes us into that fellowship. And of course, Jesus spoke that he would provide family even when his church and people are persecuted and where they might lose family. He will provide family. This is what he says in Mark chapter 10. Truly I tell you, no one who has left home or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or fields for me and the gospel will fail to receive 100 times as much in this present age. Homes, brothers, sisters, mothers, children, and fields, along with persecutions, and in the age to come, eternal life. Or maybe this is what Mary was experiencing as she exchanged Nazareth for Bethlehem. As Mary maybe lost family for God's sake in Nazareth, he provided family for her sake in Bethlehem. This God-given provision of family, when we lose family for the gospel's sake, is the privilege of the church. And surely it is a testimony of the church that we find family in one another. And may God help us to be family to those who lose family as they follow the will of God, even as Mary did in trusting Jesus, in trusting God and saying, let it be to me as you say. So God is a God who provides family. He's also a God who provides respite or relief. Again, we can assume that Mary left Nazareth under a cloud of suspicion and gossip, and she would be feeling the sting of rejection as she traveled down to Bethlehem. And yes, we do know in our own lives that God, in his sovereignty, does sometimes follow one trial with another trial and sometimes with another trial. We do know that. But we also know that God is the God who does give relief and he does give respite. He does know. He knows exactly our situation. He knows when we come to the end of ourselves. And it might just be that Mary really couldn't face another rejection. And as she gets to Bethlehem, what she finds is a wonderful provision of family, relief in her situation. And I believe that Mary found relief in Bethlehem. And so will we. We will find relief. If you're trusting in Jesus Christ, we know, don't we, that He will sustain us, and he promises us eternal relief. It is eternal relief. That respite that is eternal will come for all who are trusting in our God, willing to follow his will regardless. So God does provide respite. And of course, God is sovereign. No matter how you look at the nativity story, we will always recognize that God is sovereign. You know, it was very important that Jesus was born in a manger. There are many reasons that we could look into why Jesus was born in a manger, but I think the primary reason was that it was the key sign for the shepherds to find Jesus. Look at verse 12 in our passage, when the angel is speaking to the shepherds, and this will be a sign for you. You'll find a baby wrapped in swaddling cloths and lying in a manger. So the wise men, they were given a star to follow. But the shepherds, they were given signs to follow. And they did. You could say they were given four B's. So they were told to go to Bethlehem. It was Bethlehem. He was a boy. Verse 11, clearly he was a boy because he was Savior, Messiah, and Lord. You would find him wrapped in bands, in swaddling cloth, and you would find him in an unusual bed, a manger. And the main sign, in a way, is this swaddling clothes and being laid in a manger. That was very important. That's how the shepherds were going to know they had come to the right house, because that was the situation. So to bring about the purposes of God, God can move a ruler like Caesar Augustus to bring about a census so that Mary and Joseph come to Bethlehem. To bring about the purposes of God, God can move a unique star across the sky to bring the wise men to Bethlehem. And to bring about his purposes, God can move a couple from one adjoining room to another so that the baby is laid in a manger to bring about his purposes. You see, God is over the big things and over the small details to bring about his purposes. And we can trust him in our lives with big things that we see happening, but also with minor details. God is working out his purposes. And some of those things that look small in minor details, God may be bringing something huge about. We just have to trust him and follow him and believe in his love towards us. Finally, a finished work. You know, there is a symmetry, a balance that we see to Jesus's glorious life. In the manger, he is wrapped tightly. It would have been tightly because it was a newborn baby. So they wrapped them tightly. He was wrapped tightly in bands of cloth. And at the other end of his life, he is also wrapped tightly in bands of cloth. One, he is laid in a manger. One, he is laid in the tomb. And the shepherds, they came to the manger and they found Jesus just as the angel said they would find him. And the disciples came to the tomb and they found him just as he said they would find him, risen. Risen. And in the tomb, the bands of cloth lie there, bearing witness to a completed mission. A completed mission. Listen to what Hebrews 10 says. Therefore, when Christ came into the world, he said, sacrifice and offering you did not desire, but a body you prepared for me. What a savior we have. He took the body of the manger all the way to the cross, and he redeemed his people on the cross as he took their sin upon him. And that body was laid in a tomb. And after 3 days, he left the bands of cloth behind. It is finished. I've done it. It's over. and he will return bodily. And we want to be ready for him. I wonder, are you all ready for him, even tonight? We think that everyone here maybe is believing, but are you truly believing in Jesus Christ? I don't know what you're searching for in life. I don't know what you're searching for. But everybody is searching. Do you notice the shepherds, their search ended when they found Jesus? And it's the same for every human. That's where your search ends. That's where fulfillment is. That's where joy is. That's where peace is. It's in coming and finding Jesus Christ. And you can do that even tonight. You can come to Jesus Christ and you can put your trust in him. And your search will be over. Your restlessness will go. And you will find that you have a relationship with the living God when you put your trust in Jesus Christ. Well, there's some thoughts. There's some things to take away with us. I hope they at least, at minimum, encourage you to always examine the scriptures. Be like the Bereans who examine the scriptures. I am really, really thrilled if you go from here and you say, I'm not going to accept everything that James said, but I am going to examine the scriptures. I am going to examine them because that's where truth lies. And that's a wonderful thing to do.